Mental illness is epidemic in America, and the problem is spreading worldwide. It's time for decisive action, because the battle for the mind is part of a much larger war being waged between good and evil, with you as the prize. Welcome to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. For the next hour, we'll uncover Bible-based weapons for fighting destructive feelings and resolving inner conflicts. Dr. Jennings wants to arm you with the tools necessary for achieving emotional and mental stability as you strengthen your relationship with God. We'll open the phone lines for your questions in just a moment. I'm your Simple Solutions host, Charles Mills.
And welcome to the program. So glad that you have tuned in. There's a saying that goes, the only sure things in life are death and taxes. That's right. Well, we're not going to talk about taxes today, and the subject of death really doesn't need to be covered either. We all know what it is and how it feels to lose someone about whom we care. What we'd like to discuss on today's broadcast is how we handle what happens after someone dies, and we find ourselves submerged in that sometimes very dark, sometimes very smothering, grieving process. Oh, sure, we know that our dearly departed will live again when Jesus returns. Oh, sure, we know that death is, at least in this sinful world, part of life. Every living thing in nature eventually dies because of sin. But some of us can't quite get a handle on how to accept what has happened and move on. Our grieving affects our living. Let's talk with Dr. Jennings about the barriers we must sometimes break through as we try to step back from grief's dark door. Dr. Jennings, I'm sure as a psychiatrist, you see a lot of patients who can't seem to rebound from a serious loss in their lives. What are some of the reasons you've found for this very sad situation?
Ultimately, almost always there is one underlying root to what holds people back from moving forward after loss. And that is on some level, whether it's conscious, unconscious, gut level, they want to undo it. They want to reverse it. They want to resurrect the lost loved one. They want to take back whatever actions they have taken, if they've taken some actions that might have contributed to the bad outcome. They want to somehow undo history and reverse the events that have that they have gone through, and thus they're having a hard time internalizing into their own life story, their own life history, the events that they've gone through, and their mind doesn't have acceptance or peace with the historical facts of their life, and so they're working in some way to rewrite that and undo it in some way. That is ultimately generally the root why people can't move forward.
Well, can't we say, Dr. Jennings, that this is a natural response to death because we weren't really created to have it as part of our existence?
I think the fact that some part of us rebels against death, some part of us is pushed back by it, some part of us is put off by it and finds it noxious and unpleasant is absolutely a natural and normal response because it is not part of God's design for things. And so some part of us realizes this does need to be reversed. This does need to be undone. This does need to be remedied. This does need to be fixed. The problem is we can't do it. Only Christ can do it.
You know, in the people that I have lost in my life, and everyone listening to this program has lost someone, I am sure, maybe several people in their lives. When we hear of a death, we immediately think, what could I have done to keep it from happening? What didn't I do? And so let's come at this from two different angles. Let's say, Dr. Jennings, that there are people who are saying, if I had just done this, and sometimes what they're suggesting is beyond the realm. There's no way they could have done this. If I had just gone to visit them that day, and if I had just brought them encouragement, they wouldn't have done this. What do you tell people who are saying, it's my fault, but you know in your heart, as a psychiatrist, it's not.
Yeah, I think we have to start with a basic understanding of where the person finds themselves. And one of the metaphors I'd like to use is I ask people to think about a physical wound. Somehow they've had a deep gash in their leg, whether it was purposely inflicted by themselves, purposely inflicted by another person, accidentally inflicted because of a mistake or an accident. It doesn't matter. They have a deep gash in their leg. They're wounded. Now, once they've had this happen, are they able to go back in history and reverse it and undo it?
Well, not really. No.
No. But oftentimes people try to do this. So once we have the gash, we can't reverse history as much as we'd like to. As much as we go, oh man, what was I thinking? I'd like to go back and redo that and get a redo on this. We can't do that. So once we're wounded, we have only three options. Option number one is treat it most effectively with antiseptics, sutures, antibiotics to bring healing as quickly as possible. Option number two, we can ignore it. I had nothing wrong with me, I'll be fine. Option number three, we can actively infect it. Take some manure and some salt and rub in it. I mean, once we're wounded, those are the three options. That's it. Heal it as quickly as we can, ignore it, infect it. Interestingly
enough, let's unpack this a little bit, Doctor. Let's unpack this here. How do we infect a wound like this?
Well, I was just about to get there. I said the same thing is true with our psychological wounds. When our hearts have been wounded, we can't go back and we can't reverse it. We can't undo the history. Much as we'd like to, we can't take it back. So we have three options: deal with it to bring healing as quickly as we can, ignore it, denial. There's nothing wrong with me. I'll be fine. Actively infect it. I had a patient who is a 27-year-old lady who had a 13-month-old child, and 6 months earlier, she awoke to find her husband in bed, dead, next to her.
Oh, my.
Yes, as she came to see me, and she blamed herself. She told herself, if I was awake, I could have heard him stop breathing. If I would have woken up right when it happened, I could have done CPR. She filled her mind with images of him laying there, cold and blue. And she did all types of things, put pictures all over the house, took him with her everywhere, had a tattoo of his face put on her leg. All this stuff she was doing was trying to keep him with her, keep him alive. And these thoughts of, it's my fault, I should have woken up, I should have done something different, these were actually infecting the wound and making it worse.
Okay. So that whole denial thing is really an infection of the wound.
Well, denial, it can be an infection, but it's more like the ignoring. If you ignore
a wound,
usually does get infected. But the denial is, hey, there's nothing wrong, I'll be fine. Well, she wasn't really saying there's nothing wrong, I'll be fine. She knew something was wrong, but what she was doing was, rather than trying to treat the wound, she was trying to reverse history. In her heart, she wanted to resurrect him. She wanted to take it back. And this is what happens. A lot of people, after the loss of a loved one, they will get some sense of guilt. They will feel bad. They'll look back and say, if I would have done this, if I would have done this other thing, maybe I should have done that. And they will then start feeling guilty. Now, why does the mind do this? The mind does this because on some level, on some gut level, we want to reverse it. And we know intuitively that the only person we actually have authority over or power over is ourselves. And so the mind looks to self to find something we did wrong that we can fix. And if we fix it, you see, we'll be able to reverse all that's happened. And so our unconscious mind is playing this game with us, this trick with us. So we, in an attempt to avoid the acceptance of the fact that a loved one's gone, let's find what we did wrong that brought this about. If we can fix that, then we don't have to deal with the fact they're gone. We can fix this problem and we can keep them here, you see.
Yes.
This is a way of infecting the wound.
That brings a question, Dr. Jennings. For some who are suffering the loss of someone, they want to have the pictures around the house. They want to remember. Isn't that a healthy thing as well? Can it be a healthy thing?
It can be a healthy thing if one is not running from the loss, but standing their ground. So step one in the healing process is to stand your ground. Don't run. And we can run away from it by denying. We can run away from it by trying to find all the things that we could do to reverse it. Or we can stand our ground and say, you know what? I need to deal with this. And so the pictures can be a way of confronting the person, standing our ground, processing it through, working through the loss.
Well, we have a lot more to talk about on this program. I want to open the phone lines. Listener, if you have a question or comment on this subject, here's your chance to talk to Dr. Jennings. 800-775-4673 is the number. 800-775-4673. We'll talk more about the grieving process on our return. So stay put.
Here's your Daily Heartbeat with Dr. James Markham.
One of the best biblical treatments for all disease is that treatment called exercise. Yes, exercise is actually a treatment. It changes your chemistry. Did you know that when you exercise, you make chemicals that can lower your blood pressure, lower your cholesterol, help you fight off disease? Many other things can help. You might lower the chance of you getting diabetes even. You can help your mental health. Exercise is indeed a treatment. We originally designed to be active, to gather food, to move around. But in this well-mechanized society, sometimes this just isn't happening. We sit around, we don't move. Well, one of the best biblical treatments we have is that treatment of exercise. Try to get 30 or 40 minutes of walking in every day, and you'll start to change your chemistry.
Thank you, Dr. Markham. If you'd like more information, go to heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Welcome to Happy Hank's Hamburger Heaven. May I take your order?
Let me have a double cheeseburger, no onions, medium fries, and a Diet Sprite. Plus, I'm lost. I need some directions if you can help me.
Thank you. That's a double cheeseburger minus the onions, medium fries, Diet Sprite, and enrollment in the Discover Bible Course.
I'm sorry, what?
The Discover Bible Course. You said you wanted directions in life.
No, just to the 101 freeway.
I know. But this is even better. With a Discover Bible Course, you'll know where you're going for eternity. You'll never be lost again. You'll drive down the freeway with a whole new purpose in life.
Okay, I'll try it.
That comes to $4.72 for the food. The Discover Bible Course is free. Please pay at the window.
Thanks.
For your own set of personal directions to eternal life, call 800-775-4673.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking about grief today. Some people seem to breeze right through it. Some people have a real struggle. And I know, Dr. Jennings, the ones that have the struggle are the ones that come to see you. And I want to make sure that our listeners get some good advice here if they are struggling with grief in their lives. Dr. Jennings is a Christian psychiatrist and author. And his book, Could It Be This Simple, is a best-selling saga of redemption and a very positive way of looking at life. And I just recommend that you go to his website at www.comeandreason.com and learn more about that wonderful resource. Our phone lines are open for your questions and comments, 800-775-4673. Dr. Zing says that in the face of grief, the first thing we need to do is stand our ground. Don't run from it. Don't infect it. He says that healthy grieving includes what? Let's go through some healthy grieving steps here, Dr. Jennings. What would you say are some healthy things to do within days of the tragedy?
Well, step one, as I said, is stand our ground and do not run. Mm-hmm. Our reflex, our normal instinctual reflex to any type of pain is to run away from it, to pull back. When you touch a hot stove, without thinking, you pull your hand back. When you've stubbed your toe, the first thing you do is you fall down on the couch right there next to the coffee table where you stubbed your toe, and you pull your toe up and put your hand around it so nothing touches it.
Absolutely.
Okay? I mean, this is what our reflex is when we're in pain, is to protect the part that's hurt and pull back from any further injury. Well, when our hearts have been hurt, we have this reflex as well to pull back from the loss, which in this particular case is pulling back from dealing with the loss of the loved one. And we can pull back in lots of ways. People do it in many different ways. Some people will just have the flight into health, where it's okay, I'm doing great, I'm handling fine, don't worry about it, and they and they just rush into work and they bury themselves in work to avoid thinking about it. They're ignoring it. They're running from it. Others will turn to chemical substances to somehow alter dealing with it. Others pull into a social isolation and don't leave their room or don't leave their house because they think they're actually dealing with it, but they're not dealing with it. They're isolating and pulling back. And so there's many ways people can run from it. And that's one of the first things we don't want to do is we don't want to run from it. But now we've decided to stand our ground. What do we do next? Okay, I'm not going to run from it. What do I do next? Next critical thing is to be truthful. Be truthful. And it might sound like, well, that's obvious, but the example I gave just before we went to break, this young lady who thought she was dealing with her loss wasn't being truthful with herself. She was blaming herself for not having saved her husband when there was no blame to be had. So she was making up a false explanation of why her husband died, because I didn't wake up. If I would have woken up, I could have saved him. I could have done CPR. He died because I was sleepy. No, that's not why he died. You see? And that's not truthful. And so we can make these explanations that are not truthful that pile on false guilt and false burdens that are an obstruction to the healing process. So we have to be truthful about what we're dealing with, because we can't really get well if we're not going to be truthful. So those are the first two steps.
That is hard in any kind of healing process, to be truthful. No matter what type of ill health you're going through, what type of psychological challenges you're facing, to be truthful, that's a pretty tough road.
And the reason people are not truthful is because part of them doesn't want the truth. They want their loved one back.
Yes.
They want their broken relationship, their estranged spouse to reconcile with them. They don't want the truth that the divorce is going to happen next week. They don't want the truth that their loved one is now buried in the cemetery around the corner. They don't want that truth. They want to deny that truth and hold on to the loss, to the person that they lost.
Let's go to our phone lines. Our phone lines are open again, Dr. Jennings, 800-775-4673. Let's talk to Danielle in Washington State. What's on your heart today, Danielle?
Hi, doctor, and thank you so much for being available to me. I'm traveling, and I always look for the Christian radio station.
Oh, man.
My middle son, I have three, I'm a single parent, was 17 when he got involved with methamphetamines. He was tried as an adult, and he was sentenced to 20 years in prison at the age of 17. That was 2.5 years ago. My whole boys and I have struggled terribly with this. I have been angry, and I can't seem to get past the guilt of having failed him as a parent. And his brothers cannot seem to get past their pain around. They feel like we all had a part in creating this mess. And I need to get through that. I know that I'm forgiven, but I need to feel it. And I need to stop being pissed off at God.
Yeah, that's. I'm so glad you called us today. Let me ask you a question. Do you feel in some way that as mom, you're responsible for how your children turn out?
Absolutely. I shouldn't have been single. I should never have had children without the sanctity of marriage. But I did. And well, I feel like I failed them and not given them a dad.
Let's talk about this, because one of the assumptions made not just by you. I travel all over the country and talk to parents all over the country. And what you've just said is the starting point for, I would say, 99% of parents. They believe that they, as parents, are responsible for how their children turn out. And I may shock you when I tell you this, but that's not true. Parents are not responsible for how their kids turn out. Parents are responsible for their conduct in parenting. Even when parenting is perfect, without any flaws of any kind, as in God parenting Lucifer, it didn't guarantee that Lucifer turned out right, did it?
Well, no.
And so the point is that I'm making here is that as parents, when our children go astray, we often have this reflex to turn to ourselves and look back. Well, if I would have sent them to this school instead of that school, if I would have used cloth diapers instead of Pampers, if I would have had a father in the home, if I would have. And we look back to try to find something in the history that we can explain away what's happened. But the reality is there are many influences that influence our children that are not parental.
For instance, what happens if the loving mother has a son and that son is molested by his first grade teacher? Do you think that that could affect how that child turns out?
Sure.
What happens if that son at 14 gets in with a girlfriend who introduces him with crack cocaine? Do you think that that could affect how that boy turns out?
Yes, sir.
There are so many influences that go beyond parental influence that parents are never responsible for outcomes, but they are responsible for their conduct in parenting. And it's a really huge distinction to make that you can step back. And the difference that will happen if you make this adjustment in your thinking, the difference will happen is this. Your guilt will turn to compassion and grief. You will grieve your son's errors and the pain that he is going through. But you will no longer feel guilty and somehow blame yourself for the choices that he made that put him in that circumstance. There may be some righteous indignation and anger at the sentence that was given to your son at age 17, feeling that that was a little harsh and over the top. At the same time, there can be some recognition that as a parent, your ultimate goal for him is not that he do good in college on earth and get a home and a wife and three kids. Isn't your ultimate goal that he come to know Jesus Christ and has eternal life?
Yeah.
Okay, and in prison, he is not obstructed from coming to know Jesus Christ. And I would tell you this, I've never seen somebody who was actively using crack cocaine be able to make a decision for Christ. Okay, that stuff damages the brain, damages the mind, and obstructs the Holy Spirit's ability to bring them to conviction and transformation while they're actively using. In prison, he's in a place where his brain is now healing from the damage that has transpired when he was abusing himself with the cocaine, with the crack, or the methamphetamine, or whatever it was he was using. His brain is now in a healing position, which puts him in a position that the Holy Spirit can now reach him. And so my suggestion would be is that you accept the truth that you did the best you could do with the circumstances you had, with the motives of your heart to love your children and to bring them up in the best possible way you could. You're not going to run from the truth that there may have been mistakes because you're human, and all humans make mistakes, don't we?
Yes, sir.
But those mistakes were not volition. In other words, you weren't sitting up night plotting how you can harm your kids, how you can put more barriers in your kids' ways to make it harder for them in this life, that you were taking seriously responsibilities to do best for them. Now,
yep, I do.
Does this making sense to you?
Yeah, it all makes intellectual sense.
And now it's a matter of applying that truth and talking to the Lord about that and saying, Lord, you know, I have had a habit pattern of believing a lie, believing that I'm responsible for how things turn out rather than believing I'm responsible for my conduct. If there are some specific sins that you have participated in the past that you have never reconciled with God over, then that would be a source of appropriate guilt that you need to have a conversation with the Lord over. But again, even when we make mistakes in the past, we've did a show on this a few weeks ago. We can't change history. What changes, and look at David after he murdered Uriah and had an adulterous relationship with Bathsheba in the Bible, he couldn't undo history. But what changed was his heart. And so even if you look back in the past and find areas where you made mistakes, we can't go back and undo history. But the question you should ask yourself is, have I allowed the Lord to change my heart so that I don't live that kind of life anymore? And that is, and then you have peace knowing, hey, that old life was the life that I lived before God has healed and changed my heart. I'm living a new life now, his principles, his methods in my life to witness to my sons that even though you've made mistakes in the past, through God's grace, you can live victorious in the present and in the future.
Well, Danielle, I can tell that these words are getting through to you, that these concepts are getting through to you, and I want you to keep listening to the program for the second half here. We're going to talk a little bit more about this balance between intellectual truth. You said you intellectually understand that, but you may not feel it. We're going to talk about truth as we intellectualize it and as we feel it on the second half. So will you keep listening to us, Danielle?
Absolutely, I will, and thank you. Thank you so much.
And two more things I want to say to you really quick. One is that feelings always follow your beliefs. So you change your beliefs about this, your feelings will follow. And secondly, my website, comeandreason.com, has a lot of free lectures that will really help you work through this. You go to the website, comeandreason.com. You can download a lot of free presentations that I think you'll find beneficial.
Well, God bless your heart, Danielle. Thank you so much for calling us today. We appreciate that. All right, 800-775-4673. That woman's heart was breaking, and I think we can help her. 800-775-4673. Stay tuned.
When I was a teenager, I had one of those moms. She always knew when I was watching my favorite TV show. About 10 minutes before 9 every night, just as the police were about to catch the bad guy, she would poke her head in the TV room and politely ask me to take out the garbage. It was always the same conversation. I would say, "Can't it wait 10 more minutes?" She would say, "No, do it now, please." This would go on until I finally gave in and took out the trash. Now, do you suppose I went cheerfully? Not at all. I grumbled all the way to the curb and back. I am so embarrassed to admit it now. Did I obey my mom? Yes. Did I do it willingly? No. What benefit did I receive? None. Isaiah chapter 1 teaches that if we're willing and obedient, we will eat the good of the land. What does that mean? I believe it means when you and I are not just obedient, but willing and obedient, there's a much better life to enjoy than when we murmur and complain all the time. From Life Talk Radio.
I was 8 years old when I realized what it was that I had to do. I was walking down the street and I saw so many homeless men and women. I knew I had to find a way to help. 2 years later, I started a nonprofit group to feed the homeless. Hi, my name is Amber Kaufman, and today I'm 20 years old. For the past 10 years, the organization I created, Happy Helpers for the Homeless, has delivered love, food, and clothing directly to men and women living on the streets. We've also helped other young people discover the joy in serving others. You know there's something you need to do in your community. But maybe you thought, what can I do? I'm just one person. You'll be amazed at what a difference you can make if you just put your mind to it. Decide today to make that difference. Get out and live. Volunteer.
Brought to you by the Hitachi Foundation's Yoshiyama Award for Exemplary Service to the Community and this station.
Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid." Do you long for that peace in your life? Let's return to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings.
Welcome back to the program. Our phone lines are open for your questions and comments. 800-775-4673. You know, the words of Danielle, our caller, in the first half of the hour are still ringing in my ears. I guess there is a grieving process when a person not only dies, but in her case, her son locked up for 20 years, what could be 20 years. And she is going through some of the very same processes of grieving. That is, if her son had been buried in a cemetery someplace. And Dr. Jennings, she said something. I want to touch this before we go on real quickly. She said she understood what you were saying on an intellectual level, but she wanted to feel it as well. Is she missing something here?
Well, I think as we talked to Danielle, and I hope Danielle's still listening, that she disclosed that she was holding to certain concepts that were not exactly accurate. For instance, she was responsible for how things turn out. If you believe that to be true, it's my fault. It's my fault my son's in prison. If I would have done this, if I would have done that, what is the only way you're going to feel?
Awful.
That's right. Her feelings will never change in this circumstance because she is holding to something that's not truthful. Jesus said in John 8:32, "You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." Truth frees us from these distortions. That's why step one is stand your ground. Step two is be truthful. And the truth is, her son is in prison because he did methamphetamine. And the truth is that she did the best she could do in the circumstances she had to raise these children in the best way she could. But she is not responsible for how things turn out. She's responsible for her decision-making. So changing, bringing the truth to bear is the first step. And then after that truth resonates in the heart, then there is a change of feelings that follow behind. It also says
we try to change the feelings without realizing the truth.
That's right. And we also it says in James chapter 1 that the devil tempts us through our feelings. So we will often have feelings of various kinds that will cause us consternation. But it is important to take those feelings and examine them in the light of truth, and then move forward in the truth in spite of how we feel. One of the mistakes we make is when we let the feelings determine our reality. So we feel bad, we must be bad. We feel guilty, we must be guilty. We feel ugly, we must be ugly. We feel, you see, feelings can lie. Yeah. I have anorexic patients who are look like skeletons, and they feel fat. Mm-hmm. And since they feel fat, well, they must be fat, right? Well, no. Yeah. See, feelings can lie to us. And so it's real important that when we feel certain things, we stop and say, wait a minute, what's actually the truth here? What's the truth? Right. And the next step, I think, after that, so we've gone through two steps. Stand your ground. Yep. Now, step two, be truthful. Step three, it's important to enlarge our perspective. Look at things from a larger view. And in the case of Danielle, the larger view, and for all parents out there, the larger view is the view of eternity. That we are on this planet transitioning from a mortal life to an immortal life. And that transition occurs as we come to know Jesus Christ and open our heart to the workings of the Spirit, and we experience that renewal of heart, transformation, regeneration, moving away from a self-centered life to an other-centered life as the Holy Spirit works in us. This is the ultimate goal. And as parents, one of the things the devil, I think, tricks us into, particularly in Western society, is that we set earthly goals as the ultimate goal. We want our child to be valedictorian. We want our child to get gold medals. We want our child to be president. We want our child to, you know, have a 6 or 7 figure income and live up and drive a Rolls Royce and all these other things that we set. All those things in and of themselves, there's no problem with those things. There's no problem with excelling, and these are evidences of good self-discipline. But when we make them the ultimate goal, then the stories of people who will use cheating methods to make themselves valedictorian, that they will sacrifice principle and sacrifice character and sacrifice integrity in order to get these earthly goals. And then what do they lose? They lose internally themselves. And so our goal as parents is to raise our children to develop character like Christ, number one. Everything else is secondary. And in the case then of a child who has been tempted for various reasons to indulge in self-destructive lifestyle, and it happens to be a self-destructive lifestyle that actually changes the brain in severe ways like crack cocaine or methamphetamines, the best thing that could happen to that child is that they be put in timeout. You know, when your entire child's having a temper tantrum, when they're little, parents put them in the corner. Time out. They need time to settle down, time for their brain to calm down so they can get control of themselves, so they can gain self-control. Well, that's what we were doing. When somebody's involved in this drug abuse of themselves, prison, going to jail, is a time out. We're separating them, giving them time to detox, time to think, time to let neural circuits heal, time for them to reevaluate the course they were on, and hopefully time for them to mature and grow in character so that when they come out, they can leave a constructive and healthy life rather than a destructive life. And so from a larger perspective, a child who is abusing themselves with drugs being put in some type of lockup for a period of time, and we could argue what's the appropriate period of time, can be a very healthy thing.
You know, you have just answered a question that I have had for a very long time. I've heard of prison ministries that go in, and we'll just stay with this just a moment longer. Prison ministries, you go in, and all these people are converted and become Christians. I said, well, why not? They have nothing else to do. But now I realize why. Probably for the first time in many of their lives, their brains are actually able to comprehend the love of God, to accept the sacrifice of God, and look forward to the gifts of God for the very first time in their lives, because they've been cleaned out.
Exactly right. Exactly. You understand that prisons have a high concentration of people who have had some type of substance abuse problem for many years.
And
those things affect the brain's ability to comprehend. And so this is a place where many people do find salvation.
Wow. Wow. 800-775-4673. We're talking about grief, whether that grief is from a death or an incarceration. In this case, we were talking with Danielle about this. Stand your ground, be truthful, enlarge your perspective to include eternity. What's the next step, Dr. Jennings?
This is a difficult one, but it's move on and say goodbye.
Oh, yeah.
See, what happens when we lose someone or something even, like I have patients who've lost a limb. Same type of grieving goes forth in this process. We have a tendency to sit down in the middle of the road of life and say, I quit. I don't want to go on without you. And we may get up and go through the motions of life, but our heart is no longer in it. Our heart is stuck in the past, waiting for that person to go with us. I had a patient who's 43 years of age, had a child die, and came to see me 10 years after that child had died. And for the last 10 years, every day was the same. She would get up, she'd go into that child's room, take that child's teddy bear, and curl up on that child's bed. Every day with the lights out for the last 10 years. Now, she had two other children. She didn't go to their school programs. She didn't go to their ball games. She didn't go to their school functions. She didn't do anything. She didn't prepare meals. She didn't do anything other than lay in that child's bed for 10 years. Now, I don't find that healthy.
No.
I mean, we can understand the pain and the loss. And so the metaphor I give is this. Imagine you're walking along with your loved one in a national forest, say, in Alaska, which is fairly remote, a really remote national forest. There's no radios. There's no cell phone towers. You're out in the middle of nowhere, and you're hiking. You're on a backpacking expedition with your loved one. And along the trail, your loved one has a heart attack and dies. Now, what are you going to do? You're going to, for a while, you're going to sit down next to them. You might lay down next to them. You may stay with them for a while. But at some point, you have to make a decision. You either get up and go on without them, or you lay down there and die with them. And this is the reality of the life that we live on this earth right now. When we lose loved ones, at some point, we have to make the decision. We either lay down and die, maybe not physically, but we die emotionally. We die internally. We become an empty shell that just goes through an empty motions of life because we've let ourselves die with the person we've lost. Or we say goodbye until we meet again, until the Lord brings us together and we move on without them. This is our choice at some point, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's a painful choice. It's a difficult choice. And really, those who have a vision of eternity that have already enlarged their perspective and see the larger view have an enabling power there to be able to do this more effectively.
You know, that is a healing thing because about 10 years ago, I lost my mother, and she's buried right there in Collegedale, Tennessee, up in a little cemetery overlooking the campus. And I remember standing over that grave, looking down at the impossible. How can my mother be there? And I remember thinking, Dr. Jennings, you know, I feel awful, I feel horrible, I feel lonely, but I will see her again. And we as Christians need to remind ourselves of that fact. That's part of healing, isn't it?
That is exactly part of healing. Remember what Christ said, we must let the dead bury the dead. In other words, when we lose someone, we have a choice on where we allow our heart to be tied. We can keep our heart tied to the dead, or we can let the dead go and rest in Christ, looking forward to the day we see them again, and tie our heart to the living, and move out in ministry to help others. Paul said in Philippians 3, 13 and 14, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do. Forgetting what is behind and straining toward what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. There's a time for us to move forward and let go of the past.
I was listening to some material that you have prepared before, Dr. Jennings, and you had a patient who you said needed to actually grieve, but needed to schedule the grieving. Is that right?
Well, one of the metaphors I give patients when in the grieving process, grieving is normal. And anything I'm saying here today, don't let anyone hear that to suggest that you shouldn't hurt and you shouldn't feel pain and you shouldn't cry. Of course, we need to work through that pain, that heartbreaking, aching pain, of course. Well, so one of the things I tell my patients is I ask them to imagine being at the beach and they see a wave coming in towards them and they try to run inland away from it and that wave catches them from behind. What happens? It knocks them down. But if they see that wave coming and they stand their ground, and as it approaches, they lean into it, they stay on their feet. Well, for those of us who have grieved, we know that grief comes in waves. We can be going along fairly calm. It's kind of okay. Yeah. But then out of the blue, here comes this huge wave of grief that seems to just knock us down into tears and depression. Well, what we need to do is not run from the grief, because you can never avoid grief. You can't go around it. You can't go under it. You can't go over it. You can only go through it. So we must stand our ground and lean into the grief like those waves. And so I tell people to schedule time, 15, 20 minutes a day, where they can be home alone and purposely sit down and lean into the grief, so that if we're not doing this, if we're trying to avoid it, what happens is we're out and we're kind of doing okay, and then we hear a song on the radio that our special loved one used to love, favorite song. We see a hat, we smell a cologne, we see a hairstyle, and boom, down we go into grief. But if we do these exercises every day, leaning into it on purpose, we work through it rather than being knocked down by it.
Well, we have a couple more steps to talk about on this grieving process with Dr. Timothy Jennings. Again, phone lines are open for your questions and comments. 800-775-4673. That's 800-775-4673. Stay tuned.
Is your life stuck in fast forward? Are you doing more and enjoying less? Do you feel stressed out and tired?
If so, help is here. Speaker, pastor, and author Carl Hafner points the way to relief for the stressed out, worn out, and burned out. With humor and wisdom, Carl Hafner shows in his new book, Soul Matters, that it's possible to live a sane and balanced life in a world gone mad. But there's a catch. You must learn to cheat the lesser gods and clamor for your attention in order to honor the one true God. Find rest for your weary soul. Pick up a copy of Carl Hafner's book, Soul Matters, today. To get a copy, visit www.pacificpress.com or call 1-800-765-6955.
America's veterans have served our country in both war and peace.
It's because of people like you that we are free.
My class was learning about war and how hard it is.
I wanted to do something to let them know how I feel.
Now there is a way to thank them for helping keep America free. Log on to thankyouveterans.org and type a personal message of thanks.
Dear Dad, I've recently come to understand how important your service to America was, and I just wanted to say thank you.
There are 26 million veterans living in America today, from World War II to Afghanistan and Iraq.
We carry our experiences inside. It's nice to have someone say thanks.
Let a veteran know you appreciate their service. Log on to thankyouveterans.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Welcome back to Simple Solutions. I'm your host, Charles Mills. We're here with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings, and we are talking about grief today. He is outlining some very important steps that we need to take. Stand your ground, be truthful, enlarge your perspective to include eternity, move on and say goodbye. What comes next, Dr. Jennings?
Be hopeful. We must remember to be hopeful, and that, of course, is also helped by truth and perspective. A few years ago,
that's a hard thing to do when you're feeling so bad to be hopeful. Oh my goodness, how in the world do you make yourself hopeful when you are just absolutely just? Of course, you're looking at steps here. You can't jump from step one to step five here. You have to go through these things, right?
Not necessarily. I think you can.
Really?
I think you can be in the face of loss and in the pain, and at the same time hold to your hope that you're going to see the person again. A few years ago, I attended the funeral of a good friend, the funeral of the mother of a good friend of mine, and I was, as I was expressing my condolences, he said, "It's okay. I know in whom she's believed. I know where she is, and I know I'm going to see her again."
Yes, yes.
Which is stark contrast to patients of mine who don't believe in God, and when they lose a loved one, they will say things like, "I know I'll never see my mother again." So it is critically important to be truthful, and that truth is not only the truth of the events that we are dealing with, but the larger truths, which is that perspective truth about who we are in the cosmic scheme of things and God's plan to heal and restore and to eradicate sin, disease, and death and the reconciliation that we're looking forward to when he comes again. And so those truths are critically important too, which lead directly to our hope as Christians. And so we be hopeful. And this allows us, and this is all, you see how these things are all connected and touch each other, because that hope allows us to be able to go on and move on and say goodbye. Not goodbye, I'll never see you again, but goodbye until I see you again. It'd be similar in a kind of a way that you take a loved one down to the docks who's going on a Bon Voyage cruise, and you say goodbye as they cruise off into the sunset, but you know you're going to see them again.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going to go back home, and you're going to do all kinds of things, and you're going to have all types of stories to tell them when they return from their voyage. And when Christ comes again and brings with him those who have fallen asleep in Christ, as it says in Thessalonians, he brings those with him, we're going to all be joined together. And don't we want to have good things to tell our loved ones? You see, when my father died about 15 years ago now, I was tempted with all of these things. But I know that my father would have been very disappointed with me if I would have not moved on. If I would have stayed stuck crying for him every day, pining away for him every day, not moving onward and constructively using the gifts that God has given me to do a good work for him on this earth, my father had been very disappointed with me. And so, you know, part of moving on is also a way we honor those that we've lost.
Oh, I love that. I love that. When I see my mom, I want to tell her all the wonderful things that happened in my life. I don't want to I want to live a life that is tellable. I want to be able to sit down with my mom and say, you know, since you left in 1998, look what's happened. Here's what's happened. And I want to tell her all those things. I love that, Dr. Ding. It's wonderful. That's very hopeful.
Absolutely. And this is the actual reality. We all will have a story to tell. Our lives are a story that we will have to tell. And actually, it says in Revelation that the redeemed sing a song of their experience. Are the songs that we sing in heaven will be the song of our history and experience. And so you should be asking yourself, what kind of verses are going to be in your song?
Oh, man. What kind of verses are we living today, listener? Wow. 800-775-4673. It's not too late to change your tune. 800-775-4673. Be hopeful. What comes next, Dr. Jennings? I'm writing this stuff down.
If there is a need, and there's not always a need, but sometimes there is a need to forgive. Sometimes we lost a loved one because that drunk driver ran our mother off the road. I mean, this happens. This is life. And sometimes there is resentment. There is anger. Sometimes we lose a loved one because somebody sold our loved one drugs. Maybe, as Danielle, lost a loved one to prison because someone sold our loved one drugs. And there might be anger at the person who sold those drugs or brought those drugs to our loved one. At some point, we have to forgive, or else we hold to bitterness. We hold to resentment. We hold to anger. We hold to hostility. If we hold to these things, that's a poison in us that actually damages us. Doesn't damage the person we're angry and bitter with. It destroys our heart. And so at some point, we have to forgive and learn. Forgive and learn.
It is very difficult for many of us to do that, but I can see why it would be essential. Your whole message to the world is about believing lies and how we are believing a lie brought on by Satan, and lies believed break that circle of love and trust, and God's love cannot flow back through us. I can understand this very, very important, and I hope, listener, that you're catching a glimpse of the importance of everything that is said here in this list, because it is a progression, and it is necessary, because if we skip just one, if we don't forgive, if we're hopeful, if we move on, we say goodbye, but we don't forgive, we're still keeping that circle broken, aren't we, Dr. Jennings?
There's no question, and we keep ourselves unhappy. We keep ourselves hurting. We keep ourselves angry, bitter, and it closes and hardens our heart. And here's the insidiousness of sin. When somebody does a wrong, let's say you have a loved one, and your loved one, not you, has been wronged. Let's say a daughter has been raped. Let's say a child has been abused by some other person. A seed will be planted in your heart of anger, resentment, bitterness, hostility. If you don't root that seed out of your heart, then over the course of time, your heart will become as hard as the person who abused your child. As you become angry, hateful, resentful, the hostility wells up inside of you, and you're less compassionate, less tender, you're more irritable, more likely to fly off the handle, less likely to trust people, more likely to see evil in people where no evil exists. And over the course of time, you slowly, this plant slowly grows in your heart to transform you like the person who hurt your child. And so the only weapon God has given us to root such things out of our heart is the weapon of forgiveness. As we forgive others, we actually remove those seeds. And one of the things that helps us do that is to recognize the very nature of sin itself. Sin damages and destroys the sinner who participates in it. You cannot exploit another person. You cannot take advantage of another person without yourself being damaged in the process. The conscience is seared. The reason is warped. The character is mutated in some way every time we hurt another person.
Let's get right to our phone lines. We have one more caller on today's show, Dr. Jennings, that would like to say something to us. Sam in North Carolina, let's bring him on. And Sam, what's on your heart today, real quick?
Oh, thank you, Charles, and thank you. Oh, my goodness, Dr. Jennings, you're fabulous. I was a Vietnam veteran. I've called you once before. But I know about this grief, and I lost my colonel. And I thought I was going to die. I thought, well, if my leader can be destroyed, what about me? Why am I still here? But you need to work through those things and find that forgiveness and find that relief that somehow God can come through for you.
Absolutely, Sam. Absolutely right.
Well, Sam, you are a beautiful testimony that what Dr. Jennings is saying here is actually essential and works. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, Sam, thank you so much for that reinforcement. We appreciate that, sir.
All right, and thank you, Charles.
All righty. Okay, Dr. Jennings, with Sam's wonderful testimony there, we're drawing to the close of our program. Do you have some final words for those who are right now realizing that there is a way out? What would be your encouragement for them to start the process?
Step 7, which is our last step.
Mm-hmm.
Put God first.
Oh, my.
Keep our focus on knowing God. Get to know him, his methods, his principles, his motives. Have you ever stepped back and tried to understand God's problems, what he's trying to accomplish, to see the world as far as a human mind can from God's perspective, what he's trying to heal, what he's trying to restore, and then join him intelligently working as one of his agents to love others, to minister his grace, his love to other people, taking the focus off ourselves and building up others? Because the more we give, the more we receive. And as we love others, we experience more of his love, and we experience that healing in our own hearts.
Okay, there it is, listener. There is the list. Let me go over it real quick. Stand your ground. Be truthful. Enlarge your perspective to include eternity. Move on and say goodbye. Be hopeful. Forgive. And put God first. Dr. Jennings, I want to invite our listeners to your website where they can get more information on this subject and many others like it. www.comeandreason.com. Also, you can listen to previous programs of this series. You can just enjoy lots of resources, including get a copy of Dr. Jennings' book, Could It Be This Simple? And the Healing the Mind DVD set. I love this set. My wife and I have enjoyed it on a number of occasions. Healing the Mind, Dr. Timothy Jennings. That's all at www.comeandreason.com. Well, Sam and Danielle, thank you so much for your calls. And Dr. Jennings, again, what can I say? Wonderful words of wisdom from you. And until next week, this is Charles Mills with Dr. Jennings saying, we hope you apply the simple solutions God has placed in your heart today. Goodbye, everyone.
Simple Solutions is a production of Life Talk Radio and Dr. Timothy Jennings and is made possible by your generous support. For more information, visit www.comeandreason.com. www.thehitachifoundation.com.